Today on Straight Talk Africa, Zambian founding president Dr. Kenneth Kaunda talks about how there is life after State House and following the resignation of the Zimbabwean founding leader Robert G. Mugabe. Could this be the end of an era for those who fought for African independence from European powers? And might this just be the birth of a new type of African leadership? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ian Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, is it the end of an era to the role played by Africa's founding fathers? We'll find out.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
In August, VOA producer and reporter Paul Ndiho and I traveled to Africa, where we paid a courtesy visit to Zambia's founding president, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda. He served as the first president and prime minister of independent Zambia from 1964 to 1991. I asked the former president what he had been up to since he retired. He shared with us his thoughts on retirement and the role played by Africa's founding fathers. President Kaunda is retired, but certainly not tired. He's involved with many charities and a staunch activist in the fight against HIV/AIDS. What many probably don't know and probably may not know is that in his spare time, the 93-year-old jogs and plays the piano.
Zambia has, of course, kept me busy even after retirement. I have been able to perform in many different ways. For example, I've visited a number of provinces. I've visited a district to see exactly what is taking place in the way of development. And I find the situation heartening, I must say, truly heartening.
Strike me as someone who is very fit, because yesterday you did some jogging.
Yes, I do that from time to time, but I was trying to welcome back home this particular young man I've known for some time.
Profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled for your support. You were once a champion, and indeed a lot of other leaders in your generation. A champion for African unity. Can you briefly walk us through the journey for African unity from your point of view?
African unity is an extremely important program. I came to know President of Ghana, President of Nigeria, President of Algeria, President of Egypt, President of Sierra Leone, and locally here, President of Angola, Mozambique, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, South African President. Can you see his picture there?
Of course, your friend, the Madiba, Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela. We fought for his independence, as we did it for the independence of many other countries. Around here, Zimbabwe, Mugabe there today. All these leaders through African unity are known. And all those around us, as I said earlier, we helped to fight for their independence. I've walked through that path in all my life. And I thank God that I was able to do that.
Do you have a message for the new breed of African leaders in as far as African unity is concerned?
we have to build a new Africa out of poverty, a new Africa out of hatred within our country, each of our countries.
So you want an Africa without boundaries, without borders, just like the dream of your generation. Is that what I hear from you?
Precisely what you're saying, young man, is what I'm saying. We need to come together, even today, in their own homes, in their own countries. Each one of our leaders is a known, must be a known tribal leader.
Yesterday, Wednesday, when you came here, you sang a song for us. And we, in fact, even joined in and started singing a song that symbolized the fight against AIDS. Can you tell us a bit about your work of fighting AIDS?
In the name of great Africa, we shall fight and conquer AIDS. Forward, ever, backwards, never. We shall fight and conquer it. We shall fight and conquer it. In the name of great Africa, we shall fight and conquer it.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. In fact, when you mention forward ever, backward never, reminds me of another African giant leader, your mentor, the Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Was he someone who inspired you? Was he a sort of role model? What was he to you?
A great man, a great leader, a great man.
Your friend, the Madiba, once said, I have retired from retirement. Therefore, do not call me. Instead, I will be the one to call you when I need you. When are you going to retire from retirement, Mr. President?
It is all very well to retire from premiership and allow another human being to take over as president. But for me, as Kaunda, I stand ready to continue to serve my fellow human beings in this life for as long as I am alive.
Joining us here in the VOA studio are two distinguished guests. Dr. Kenneth K. Mwenda, extraordinary professor of law, University of Pretoria, in South Africa, and he's also a former Rhodes Scholar at Britain's Oxford University. Ni Akwete, African policy analyst and activist. Well, I have to say, frankly, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa one more time.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you so much. Joining us from the VOA Bureau in New York is Ambassador Chintu Nyago, Ugandan Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations in New York. And last but not least, Dr. Sishua Sishua, a political historian at the University of Zambia and former Rhodes Scholar himself at Britain's Oxford University. He joins us via telephone link up from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Ambassador Nyago and Sishua Sishua, it's always a pleasure, of course, having you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka.
Thank you for having me, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Well, I have to say frankly that I am especially privileged to have the four of you really reflecting, for example, at a very, very important man in Lusaka, a man who probably has seen it all. Your reaction, Kenneth?
Yeah, I think it was good to see you, Shaka, there with Dr. Kaunda, first mm-hmm. president and founding president of Zambia. I mean, he is a great leader that Africa has seen in the last century, no doubt. I think of the other senior statesmen that I can think of, it's Kwame Nkrumah, Nelson Mandela. Those sort of match up to his stature. Of course, Mandela was a bigger person.
What about
Nyerere too, in Tanzania?
Sekou Toure?
Yeah, we've had some Sekou Toure, yes. But what we are seeing
lately... Sasere Sekama?
Of course.
Botswana.
But what we are seeing lately, I'm trying to draw a contrast between the founding presidents and the new generation of leaders. It's a bit disappointing. There are not many good stories across the continent to tell. Again, there are mixed feelings. If you look at, for example, some countries I will not want to mention, but people from some of those countries will tell you different stories about their leader. But, you know, international foreign relations, person projects a different image. So there are mixed feelings. But we don't have sort of a unanimous consensus to say, like, this is Nkrumah. Of course, the Ghanaians themselves, if you talk to Ghanaians, they were somewhere anti-Nkrumah, is domestic policies.
Correct,
not all
correct,
that.
Correct.
But at the international level, Nkrumah stood tall. Kaunda stood tall. There's no question about it. You're talking of even people like Samora Machel in Mozambique. There's no question about it. Where there was...
What about Robert Mugabe? Robert Gabriel Mugabe?
Mugabe started pretty well in the initial phases of his presidency, but things kind of dwindled down. We never heard much from Kamuzu Banda in Malawi, because Kenya and Malawi, from independence, they pursued an accommodation development strategy which basically inherited and retained institutions they inherited from the colonial masters.
The Americans would probably call it, they adopted a policy of a sort of constructive engagement.
Precisely. Zambia and other countries tried to sort of reform, reorganize the institutions. Of course, they were the leftist, the radical, the Mozambique, Angola, which pursued the socialist Marxist path.
Mm-hmm.
But Zambia was somewhere in between. And so you see, if you look at Zambia and countries like Tanzania, which pursued African socialism, humanism, ujamaa, negritude under Senghor, all those ideologies at the time. So the 80s were a very exciting moment.
Right.
I was at undergraduate University of Zambia, and so I was a student when President Kaunda was in power.
Very interesting. Now, talking about being at the University of Zambia, of course, one of our guests is Dr. Sishua Sishua, who happens to be a political historian at that same important institution. Dr. Sishua, are you there?
I am indeed.
Dr. Sishua, you of course remember that when we taped that interview, we were together. As a matter of fact,
that's correct.
You drove us from Lusaka to the suburbs to meet with the president.
It was my pleasure.
What was your reaction during the taping of that interview as you saw him? I remember you were so close to him. What was your reaction, really?
Well, it was a privilege, I think, to hear him, offer his thoughts on a number of issues that really are part of his enduring legacy. His comments on the need for African unity speaks to the vision of our founding fathers, particularly those who founded the Organization of African Unity, the AU. He also spoke about issues of HIV/AIDS. He also spoke about, after State House. And these are issues, I think, that have secured him a place on the right side of history in many ways, and which distinguish him from many of his contemporaries. But also, I think it was it's always a pleasure when you meet President Kaunda, because he's unique in two main ways in comparison to, when measured against his fellow nationalists of that generation. He's one of the few surviving, liberation aristocrats, but also he's one of those who didn't have to be pushed out by anybody in terms of how he left power. He left power in a very dignified way. So he's unique in that respect. And it's always a pleasure for a young person like myself to listen to someone like him, who in many ways has traversed the long road of life that he lies ahead.
How did he become so resilient, a man who was very, very badly defeated by Frederick Chiluba back in 1991 in a huge landslide, you remember? And this man had the courage, despite being an incumbent African president, to concede defeat with grace. At the time, obviously, he didn't seem to be popular, especially if you look at the polls, which were obviously credible. But he has since turned around his image, and he is the darling, really, of the Republic of Zambia.
Well, he's a darling more than of, he's a darling of Zambia, but he's also a darling of Africa. And I think that in many ways, time has rehabilitated President Kaunda. When he left power, you know, in 1991, he wasn't as popular or revered as he is now. Many Zambians associated the collapse of the economy with his nationalist party, you know, the United National Independent Party. And it's important to also remember that you know, Kaunda was not really somebody who was power hungry, so to say. And I think this is demonstrated by the fact that when he called the election in 1991, he did so 2 years ahead, because the election, he had a five-year term, which was secured in 1988. But when it emerged that Zambians wanted change, he said, "I'm not going to deny it to Zambians." Of course, part of he did so partly because he believed he would have to win the election. And even when he lost, he blamed the women that they didn't come out to vote. But I think that you have to give it to him. He's not, you know, somebody who was really interested in power for power's own sake. His self-restraint, his judgment, in relation to power, has been exemplary. But what has helped him, I think, in terms of reinventing himself, are a number of factors. The manner, of course, in which he left power, the dignified way in which he conceded defeat and allowed the smooth handover of power, is an enduring legacy that I think has meant that successive Zambian leaders have had to lead to that democratic tradition. But also, his successors, in my view, have not done much in terms of the development agenda. So many Zambians now look back to the Kaunda years as the dividend period in terms of independence. And the failure, I think, by his successors has highlighted his positive record when he was in power. In 6 years in office, saw most of the major infrastructure development that Zambia has there. The invention of Zambia itself was constructed in the 6 years of independence. So people remember him, for that first wave of development, education, health, so massive investment in these areas. But also people remember him for uniting diverse ethnic groups and forging what we have there in Zambia, you know, a country that is free of ethnic strife, unlike many other Zambian countries, united around the motto of one Zambia, one nation. So the young generation of Zambians can only hear these positive things, and they can only imagine, for example, that education, now expensive, was once free. When you combine the fact that he left power in a dignified way, he has not, his successors have not done better than him in terms of the development agenda. You have a young generation of Zambians who don't know much about the negative side of Kaunda in power. And the fact that he has also involved himself in other issues like HIV/AIDS, this, in my view, explains his ability to renew himself to the level where today he is widely celebrated in Zambia. But also people remember him for his contribution the liberation struggle is a larger than life figure in South Africa, in Namibia, in Angola, and in Mozambique as well as Zimbabwe. If it was, in my view, in another world, you know, he would have even won a Nobel Peace Prize for his contribution to the liberation of Southern Africa. But I think that what that highlights is the fact that time has really rehabilitated him.
He was clearly a man who never had boundaries, no borders in his mind, really. For him, Africa was Africa, and it was for Africans. Now, we obviously have had two gallant Zambians. Let's go to New York and hear to what Ambassador Kintu Nyong'o has to say. Your reaction, Ambassador Kintu.
Well, thank you, Shaka. I take the view that Africa was faced with very difficult situations at independence, and the leaders we had, some failed, but there are many good examples. Because you find that if you had to talk about issue of, say, the political succession, there are many good examples we can draw from Africa. For example, like in South Africa itself, in the post-apartheid situation, Tanzania, Senegal, even Nigeria, Angola, Mozambique, and so forth. But now, because of the problems these leaders were faced, you find that they required time. Because, for instance, take Botswana. When Botswana got independence, it hardly had even a national economy. There were hardly any roads in Botswana. The capital of Botswana was actually in South Africa. It was in Mafeking. Mafeking is in South Africa. So Sasaret Sekama and his party and his people had to build from scratch. Colonialism hardly did anything in Botswana. And a lot was achieved by Sasaret Sekama. He left a country with the political infrastructure to ensure peaceful succession. He left a thriving economy. Diamonds were discovered under Sasaret Sekama and were not squandered. But I mean, so you find that really many of our African leaders amidst all these problems have actually qualified to be world class. Take a country like Mozambique. Mozambique had many problems. I mean, the challenges of colonialism, 500 years of colonialism, the issue of the insurgency of Renamo. But I mean, Frelimo has managed to stabilize the country, to have a government that is democratic, with Renamo itself being the official opposition. Mr. Dilekama is the head of the opposition. And those are some of the achievements Africa should pride itself off. And there are many others, Nigeria, Ghana, and so forth. So really, what Muzei Kaunda did was commendable, but it was not unique, is my point. It was not unique. In fact, other leaders even didn't go for elections. Mwalimu Nyerere was very popular, but Mwalimu Nyerere decided to resign from power. That is not usual, even in the Western countries, whereby Nyerere would have won hands down. CCM was a very popular party. But based on his own calculations, Mwalimu Nyerere decided to resign. And much more importantly, many of these leaders were not ruling alone. They had other people they were working with. Take South Africa, people like Oliver Tambo, people like Joe Slovo, Ruth First, Sisulu, amongst others. Go to Tanzania, the Kawawas, and so forth. So you find that these are some of the examples from Africa. So it's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of inspiration on the African continent amidst the challenges.
Your point is well made, Mr. Ambassador. Let's go to Ni Akwete, a man who hails from where it all began. The liberation of Africa begins on March 6, 1957, in Accra, the Ghanaian capital, when the Osagyefo makes a speech during that Independence Day and talks about the challenges that faced the young nation. And he said that the independence of Ghana would be meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of the entire continent. And he did not simply talk the talk, he actually went on to walk the talk, provide the necessary tools so that the rest of Africa, in fact, could walk the walk.
That is very true, and that brings for me treasured memories, because I remember the night of March 5th, and then at midnight the Union Jack being lowered and the Ghanaian new Ghanaian flag raised, and President Nkrumah and his lieutenants were on the dais and made the speech. But you know, I want to link it to a couple of things. You mentioned about President Kaunda, that he was a man without borders. You know, it seems to me that he and their cohort understood that the shape of African countries, in fact, the professor is here, one of my ambitions is I want to write a book about why African countries are shaped the way they are. The shape of African countries were determined by Europeans with bad intentions. They divided us. And therefore, all those amazing liberation African leaders...
You're talking about that Berlin Conference of 1884,
precisely,
when Europeans sat around a huge table.
Yes.
A huge table.
Yes.
I think it was actually Chancellor Bismarck.
Otto
who was chairing
Bismarck.
The day.
Yes.
That is true. With not a single African representation or even observer. The Americans, in fact, were observers.
Precisely. And our liberation leaders understood that we were divided to keep us weak. And therefore, their number one job was to get rid of colonialism. The second job was to unite us. So they don't see themselves, Kaunda does not see Zambians as different from Zimbabweans or South Africans or Ghanaians or Senegalese. And Nkrumah saw the same thing, which is why he stressed that it doesn't make sense for Ghana, comparatively small, to say we are independent regardless of what else happens across the continent. I think that is so important. They see themselves and their continent as one and one people.
One people. What about that all-important conference of December 1958 in Accra?
Yes, I think, I remember that.
One of the delegates, by the way, was a young man who I just talked with now at 93.
Yes, yes.
Dr. Kenneth Kaunda himself.
Yes, another one was Sam Nujoma. Another one was Patrice Lumumba. I mean, it was a privilege growing up in Accra at the time, because it's like every week some important movers and shakers, young, inspiring Africans.
We should mention, of course, Jaramogi Oginga Odinga, father of Raila Odinga,
yes,
was there, the
yes,
author of Not Yet Uhuru.
Yes, yes.
That Africa is still really colonized, so to speak.
Precisely. And they all came through and they understood that, look, we have to unite. It seems to me, though, you know, I think it was a professor who mentioned about the current leadership. Their job, it seems to me, is a little more complicated. The fight that the liberation leaders had was difficult, but it was clear. We were being governed against our wishes. We were being told we weren't good enough to handle our own affairs. We were being colonized and settled, and they wanted to free us. Right now, I think we are still under a number of systems that are not good for us, but it is very complicated, and I think that the outside world has also become more sophisticated. They are better at buying and co-opting our leaders.
We should say, by the way, that, of course, there were several other people who were part of the delegation of 1958. We're talking about a man called Dr. Hastings Kamuzu Banda himself.
Yes. He lived in Ghana. And since we also, you know, by the way, thanks for having us. I think this is a great program. And since it's marking the getting off the stage of Mr. Mugabe, both Mr. Mugabe and Dr. Banda lived in Ghana, lived in Accra, came under the influence of Dr. Nkrumah, but they went very separate ways. You know, Dr. Banda, when he took over in Malawi, as has been said, he was pretty much an accommodationist, especially in the fight against apartheid in South Africa. Whereas Mr. Mugabe was seen and is still seen, including by me, as a liberator, as one who freed his country, as one who took back the land. And if I might add, of course, I mean, there are divided opinions about him. I happen to think that we must not forget the war that the West waged against him because he took back the land. I think it was right to take back stolen property, especially when the West had promised they would give him money to buy it back, and that money did not come. But from the point of view of the West, That made him a devil.
The money was actually flowing. It was discontinued by Tony Blair,
yes.
A man from Oxford like you, by the way, Professor. Now, the thing is, we talked, of course, about the delegates that attended and benefited out of that all-important conference in Accra.
Yes.
You had people like Holden Roberto.
Yes.
A man who later, of course, becomes one of the big three in Angola.
Right, right.
Then, of course, I have to say, frankly, for selfish reasons, that one of the key organizers, besides George Padmore, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois,
yes.
was a young Ugandan man named John Kare from Chisoro in southwestern Uganda, whose son is currently the Inspector General of the Uganda Police, General Kare Kehura.
I have to confess, I did not know that fact. In my defense, I'll say there were so many young stars
yes.
milling around Accra. You know, Malcolm
there
S. came
Tomboya, Tomboya,
Tomboya came.
Course, a lot of stars.
Yes, a lot. And I was seeing it with a child's eyes, but it was an exciting time to be in Ghana. And I think it affects you forever. My excuse as being an activist at my age is that you have to forgive me because you have to look at how I grew up.
Nia Kwete, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward, to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Chaka. We are at a unique stage in history where the founding fathers of African nations, who have shaped for decades the political landscape of the continent, are gradually leaving office or conceding power. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, are we witnessing the new dawn of a new dawn of era in African politics? And if so, will this instigate a positive or negative change for the continent? Well, let's see what our online audience has to say, starting with a tweet from King Chroma from Liberia, who writes, I think so. Looking at the current political landscape of the continent, countries are trying to practice good democracy. In recent times, there have been two elections. The one in Kenya was annulled through court, and the Liberian still pending runoff or rerun in court. And we have another tweet from Robin in Tanzania, who has a pessimistic view. He says, there will be no new era down here, no democracy, and we, the citizens, are in limbo of lost dreams. The whole place is smeared with dirty politics, north, west, east, central. There's no political hope here. Maybe we need our own form of government and no democracy at all. Well, I, for one, am excited to see what our panel's reaction is to that comment. Before we get to them, let's go to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Eddie Edelman from Uganda, who writes, I am quite positive about the changes that are happening. People are starting to own their governments. Africans are now rising up to listen to brilliant ideas and also act accordingly. With the youth being enlightened and exposed in this great era of technology, it won't be long before Africa will rise to new heights. Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Nakachuku Ziogu, who writes, the youth is not ready. Hunger and starvation is being used as a political tool carved by the West and sold to African leaders. Otherwise, what's Paul Biya still doing in Cameroon's government house? And our last Facebook comment comes from Umar Jarma of Nigeria, who writes, yes, indeed, the fall of Mugabe is the beginning of a new era because other dictators like him will soon fall. African nations cannot develop when they are treated like personal estates. Well, lots of opinions shared here, and a reminder that we appreciate all the audience feedback. If you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. To comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. To watch us live on your mobile device, just download VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next, on Straight Talk Africa, we'll reflect on the major events that shaped the political landscape of the continent in 2017 and look at the continued struggle for social and economic justice of the average African in 2018. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Thank you so much, Ayen, for sharing with us that important social media aspect of our program. Today's topic, is it the end of an era played by Africa's founding fathers or what? Our distinguished guests are Dr. Kenneth K. Mwenda, Ni Akwete, Ambassador Kintu Nyago, who joins us from New York, and Dr. Sishua Sishua, who joins us from Lusaka. Gentlemen, I wish, of course, we're a little bit gender sensitive. We try to get a female, really, guest, but unfortunately, we are not able to get one. But I hope that you don't have to worry about that, because I know that you are very, very objective people, and you can obviously talk on behalf of all of us. So once again, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the four of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thanks for having us.
You're most welcome. Now, you know, let's talk about, Kenneth, what do the new breed of African leaders, what are they supposed really to learn from people like the founding fathers? What is it that they are not doing, especially given that we know that there is a saying that the intellectual balance of power has been shifting in our favor.
Thank you so much, Shaka. First of all, a little footnote. The conference in Accra, there's one name I think which deserves to be mentioned. That is Almika Cabral from Guinea.
Yes.
Cabral was
there.
Yes,
indeed.
I have a lot of respect for a lot of his writings, his development of Marxist-Leninist literature. On the forces of development.
He was an agronomist by training.
So Cabral was one of the people who were the thought leaders. If you look at the independence leaders, most of them, Nkrumah was a PhD student.
Correct.
In the States. Jomo Kenyatta, I think, had a master's degree from London School
of Economics.
Back in the days.
Yes.
Mwalimu Nyerere had a master's degree. You're talking of...
He went to Edinburgh, yes.
Kamuzu Banda was a medical doctor.
Yes.
So you can actually see the caliber of these guys. You're talking of the 60s.
Yes. And
at
of
that
course,
time.
And of course, alongside people like George Padmore.
Precisely.
Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois or De Boer, whatever you want to call it.
You know, if you look at Mozambique, there was Eduardo Mondlane. People like that before Samora Machel.
Right.
So... These guys were thought leaders.
The man who used to be a professor at Syracuse.
At Syracuse. These guys were thought leaders. They were not just opportunists trying to occupy space. But what we are seeing...
They were not really, when you think about it, they were not what some some have characterized as patriotic to their stomachs.
I know, precisely.
Especially look at a man like Dr. Kenneth Kaunda.
Right.
When he lost the presidency,
right.
He actually did not have a personal house.
Yeah. In fact,
Nkrumah did not have a house.
Yeah. In fact, on Nkrumah and Kaunda, I want to say something, and I want to agree with my brother in Zambia, Dr. Sishua Sishua, who laid out a good foundation there. There is something unique. I wouldn't say it's ordinary, it's unique. Nkrumah worked hard to sort of mentor and accommodate the Kamuzus, the Mugabes. Kaunda took the same philosophy. When Uganda's president, Milton Obote, was overthrown, he was welcomed in Zambia. He lived in Zambia. SWAPO Namibia was fighting.
That is the second time he was overthrown.
Yes.
Because the last time I checked, the first time, in fact, he was a guest of Julius Nyerere.
That's true.
In Dar es Salaam.
So SWAPO Namibia was fighting from Lusaka, Zambia. They were accommodated. ANC, South Africa, they were fighting from Lusaka, Zambia. ZAPU Zimbabwe was fighting from Lusaka, Zambia. Then you had a bit of the Angola faction, Frelimo. They were being supported. So you don't see that anyhow. You find it in Ghana, you find it in Zambia. It's not something I can take as ordinary. So this is a distinguished feature of true leadership. But of course with the support of the Zambian people. Kaunda was not alone here with the support of the Zambian people. So when Sishua points out that this is a man, I think, who deserves a Nobel Prize, I fully endorse that.
He definitely does. What about you, Sishua, Sishua? What do you think? Oh, I see. Let me again come to you, Nii Okwete. What do you have to add here, really?
No, I endorse everything my brother, the professor, has said. You know, these were people who understood that their countries were carved by others, that their linkages, their identity as Africans was so important that they had a role to give a helping hand to those who are coming. And in fact, it goes to something that is a concern of mine. You know, you hear a lot about youth, today's youth being leaders. I endorse that 1,000%. But what I do think should be added is that the youth should not reinvent the wheel. Okay, Zambian politicians, up and coming, should be talking to Dr. Kaunda, should be studying what he did. Even something you think was a mistake, if you know what the mistake is, you will not repeat it. So I think that what we must emphasize in looking at our future, in looking at the youth, in looking at young people, I mean, Africa's population now is a young population. And they have energy, and they want to get their hands on power and move forward. I endorse that, but I'm saying learn what those who came before have done, where they succeeded, where they had difficulties, and in particular, I will say learn their wariness and distrust of the so-called international community. Because those are the people who colonized us. Those are the people who are now operating neocolonialism and neoliberalism. That is what I will add. We need to learn from the wisdom of the elders. Otherwise, we would be reinventing the wheel, and that will be a disaster.
Ambassador Nyago, are you there?
Yes, Shaka.
Yeah, you know as well as I do that it is a fact that the intellectual balance of power has actually been shifting in our favor. We can now go pretty much to any university in the world. We can actually, all of us now, read a paragraph and come up with different interpretations. What is it that the new generation, in your view at least, you think that they need to learn from the founding father in order to deliver to the African people?
Okay, thank you, Shaka. I think the current leadership has learned a lot, but I just want to make a few comments on the Ghana conference. John Karekezi was a member of the Uganda National Congress, the gentleman you mentioned from Uganda. Uganda National Congress was the party headed by Musazi, and Karekezi was based in Cairo. And he worked under Gabriel Nasser. Nasser formed what they called the Afro-Arab Solidarity, he used to coordinate. So Karekezi, that is how he came to Accra to represent the Afro-Arab Solidarity Movement and also the Uganda National Congress with people like Abu Mayanja and others. Now, Africa, as you know, Shaka, has many challenges. you find that there are very unique situations. For example, take a country like Botswana once again. It had apartheid in the south. I mean, a very weak country, as we mentioned, without infrastructure at colonialism, at independence rather. But threatened apartheid in the south and west, where there is Namibia now, and then Rhodesia in the north. So for the leadership of Botswana to have maneuvered that and created a nation state shows you world-class qualities of our leaders at that time, because the constraints were immense, but they managed, because they managed. But not only that, they also formed the frontline states, as has been mentioned by the Professor Mwenda, that led to contribution in the fight against apartheid. I take the view that the founding fathers were without doubt great leaders, but their struggle and their contribution is continuing, because you find that there are many countries where these leaders were, where there is continuity, as for example in Mozambique, as for example in Senegal, as for example in Tanzania, Mwalimu Nyerere mentored Ali Hassan Mwinyi, Mwalimu Nyerere mentored Mkapa, Chikwete and others, and Botswana itself has had continuity. So that continuity in the countries of we have mentioned is within the framework that was laid down by the founding fathers we are acclaiming today. Even in Zimbabwe, you find that the peaceful, within the controversy that occurred, the peaceful transition that took place did not just fall from heaven. It shows you that President Mugabe did indeed put in place professional structures, a professional and disciplined military, and a political party that's viable, ZANU-PF, and the leadership of people like Mnangagwa to be able to command the charisma and so forth. These were mentored by President Mugabe, plus his army commander Chiwenga. These were people who have been mentored by President Mugabe and ZANU and the leadership of those situations. Now, coming to the contribution of Africa today, true. In the past, Africa used to say, Africans used to have host liberation struggles, as has been mentioned in Lusaka and elsewhere in Ghana. But today, there are different challenges. For example, you find that we have, in Africa, we have created economic integration. You find there is ECOWAS, which is fairly viable. You find there is SADC. You find there is the East African Community. In East Africa, most of the East African countries actually trade between themselves. The biggest trading partner of Uganda today is Kenya. Now, you find that apart from that, Africa has also managed to solve many other intricate and challenging problems. Take the IGAD AMISOM initiative in Somalia. And we all know what global terror is and extremism. But AMISOM, in a very gallant manner, an African initiative, has managed to stabilize Somalia. The IGAD region again has played a very key role in attempting to stabilize the situation in South Sudan. The East Africa community is engaged in the Burundi peace situation. And again, the SADC region played a key role in being the midwives of the transition we saw in Zimbabwe. ECOWAS did a similar thing in the Gambia. So, a lot of continuity, and much of this continuity is from the background of the founding fathers, from the foundation laid by the founding fathers. In my view, the founding fathers' struggle was not in vain. We have learned a lot from that, gained from that, and consolidating on that contribution.
Thank you so much. Well, Professor Mwenda, there are some people who actually have been talking about former European colonial powers owing Africa some sort of reparations. I know, of course, that you are a former Rhodes scholar, and we're talking about a very, very good fellowship that comes as a result of a specific individual, Sir John Cecil Rhodes, right, who personally owned two countries called Rhodesia, one in the north, now Zambia, another in the south, now Zimbabwe. Was that a form of reparation in your particular context? Because I've always, in fact, argued,
yes,
that if there is anybody sincerely,
yes,
who qualifies for such a fellowship or scholarship, it should be people around Rhodesia and Southern Africa, for that matter?
Thank you for that question, Shaka. I'll be very candid. I can choose to be diplomatic, but I'll be very candid. The BSA company, British Southern Africa Corporation, which was run by Cecil Rhodes, basically that's where much of the money came from. And there was a will that Cecil Rhodes left. But now what has happened in the UK is that the UK legislature has actually passed legislation to intervene in the will and introduce new Rhodes scholarships in places that were not intended by the donor.
Really?
Yes.
I thought that at one time they had combined Rhodes scholarship with Madiba himself, Mandela.
The actual will of Cecil Rhodes did not include some of the countries that are now receiving Rhodes scholarships.
What about the Americas?
The Americans have always been there.
I see.
It was part of the will. Mm-hmm. But other countries, for example, Germany and all these other countries, they were not there. But it's through the EU, you know, and
this is African money.
Yeah, exactly.
African blood money.
It's now an act of parliament. So, you know, there's been that intervention. Now, these are legal arguments. We can choose another day. It's a long battle for that. But we are seeing now new Rhodes scholars in, you know, from the EU coming in and so forth in Oxford. But that's a different debate. Now, the issue of reparations. From an international law point of view, it's a very difficult one because even the African Americans have spoken about reparation slavery. You need
the Caribbean.
Yeah, and the Caribbean. If you think of Haiti, for example, Haiti is still paying the French.
Got independence in 1804.
You know, can you imagine?
Now,
as poor as Haiti is,
yes,
they have to go through that. So it's a very difficult one. Much of it actually moves out of the legal arena. It becomes a political issue. You know, you need to lobby a lot. And the Francophone...
And I think Haiti now is a member, in fact, of the African Union,
yes,
isn't it?
I mean, African Francophone countries have been very lucky in the sense that French often sits behind the agenda that they are pushing. France is always there. But for the Anglophones, once we got independence, we are on our own. We are, you know, the English will not sit behind you. The British won't push for you. But the Francophone move as a bloc. You know, so those are some of the challenges that we are facing. So,
and I move as a bloc for whose benefit?
Of course, that's...
If you forgive me, right. Yes, I was itching to jump in,
right,
because I think one contrarian view is that actually the former Anglophone countries, being on their own, not having the support of the former colonial masters, I sleep better at night, because what the former colonial masters will do in supporting you, I am extremely and totally suspicious of that. And I think another form of reparation, I'm reminded of this, if you'll forgive me, in the recent headlines, we have the issue of African migrants trying to get to Europe, being enslaved in Libya, dying in the Mediterranean. And I keep saying the reason is the Europeans have a clear policy. No Africans here. They don't want Africans coming in there. And when you look at their 500-year history of colonial... Yeah, it's not possible, but they could have had a better policy of allowing a few Africans in, given the fact that people like Cecil Rhodes went to South Africa, was the prime minister, as you mentioned, his
of
influence...
Cape Province.
Yes,
and then how, he took over basically.
Right, those two countries.
Territory. Yes.
I mean, the record of Europeans
through the Anglo-Boer War,
right,
yeah,
in Africa is long and sordid. And I actually think that it is a failure of today's European leaders that, yes, they have xenophobia, they have right-wing parties saying, we don't want foreigners here, but they should be telling them their own history. Europeans settled in Algeria from A to Z, from Algeria to Zimbabwe to Zambia.
Algeria was, at least according to the French, an overseas
territory of
province, basically.
When we talk about reparations by African Americans in this country, the United States, and in the Caribbean, we are talking of people of African descent. How did they get here? They got here through the slave trade, which was very much a European enterprise. Europeans put together investment, built ships, filled it with guns, took it to Africa, encouraged Africans to fight and capture people so they can bring them here. The stuff that Europeans have done against Africa is long and sordid and 500 years, and therefore the least is that they will allow a few Africans to come in there who want to work, who don't even like winter. So they want to work a little bit and go back home, and yes, they do owe reparations. It's true that it is difficult, but I even look at it, like the professor said, as a political issue and as a moral issue.
Very interesting. Let's go to Ambassador Nyago in New York for his reaction to that. What about the issue of reparations?
Well, I think it's justifiable because after World War II, when the Nazis, with all those crimes against humanity they committed, they were indeed made to pay reparations. Now, Africa has suffered in terms of slavery. Slavery is not just about figures. It's about the best of our people were taken forcefully to the diaspora. And that left a lot of socio-economic dislocation. All people remained behind, diseases. There was conflict that occurred because slave traders never negotiated. These were abductions, and the best of our people were taken in their millions. That phenomenon has only occurred in Africa, Shaka. There has never been that type of slavery or such organized system.
Could you please sum up, because time happens not to be our best ally, Ambassador?
Yes. Okay, that said, I think really the issue of reparations needs to be taken seriously and put on the table.
Very interesting, very interesting. So you basically pretty much all agree, really.
Yes, the only point that I can make, and I fully agree with both my learned brothers here, is that if you look at the issue of, for example, the Jewish community, their money in Switzerland, after the Holocaust and so forth,
yes,
they've been able to recover that money.
Right.
Africans cannot recover the money that heads of state have stashed in Switzerland and so forth, because of secrecy banking laws in Switzerland.
You were telling me that this story that was carried by CNN about the existence of slave trade in Libya,
yes,
African slaves, someone will say they are being actually sold by their fellow African brothers, correct?
No question.
But you were saying that the timing of the story probably had had an effect on what was supposed to be taking place in Abidjan.
Between the African Union and the European Union. And I happen to think that it embarrassed the European Union, because once again, when I look at this phenomenon, I think the number one perpetrator that we should be looking at is the European Union, because they have a lot of power, they have a lot of money, they have a closed-door policy to Africans, and I think that they need to do better. They can start, the reparations is long and complex, but they could start by saying, we must allow a few Africans who want to come here and work. It can be streamlined, so long as they say nobody, and they are blocked, in effect, have a naval blockade on Libya so that the Africans are kept in Libya, that leads to the slavery. Now, in terms of Africans collaborating, it is true. But in Nazi Germany, there were Jewish people who collaborated. In France, there were French people who collaborated. That doesn't mean that the Nazis were not wrong. They were wrong.
Unfortunately, again, my brother, you have to forgive me. Time
is
not our best ally. On that note, thanks to our four distinguished guests, Dr. Kenneth K. Mwenda, Ni Akwete, Ambassador Kintu Nyago, and Dr. Sishua, who joined us earlier. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.